Welcome to a series of talks about objective consciousness, an objective universe, and an objective way to awaken. Expanding upon the works of George I. Gurdjieff and Russell A. Smith. This podcast is part one of the conclusion of the audiobook of The Blueprint of Consciousness. In this episode, we read part one of chapter one of the objective sequel to Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson, written by Russell A. Smith, and entitled Beelzebub's Last Wish. Let's begin. The Blueprint of Consciousness, an Accelerated Path to Awakening, by Russell A. Smith. Conclusion. Beelzebub's Last Wish, Chapter 1, Part 1. After Russell attended the first All and Everything conference in Bognor Regis, England, a conference that was created for the sole purpose of discussing his book, Gurdjieff Cosmic Secrets, he began writing another book. Not a math book, but a book with esoteric ideas called Beelzebub's Last Wish. Russell wanted it to be an objective sequel to Beelzebub's Tales to His Grandson. Unfortunately, he was only able to finish the first few chapters because students from all over the world who had already read Gurdjieff Cosmic Secrets started asking if they could come to Texas and study with him. As a result, he had students non-stop for several years and therefore had no time for writing. So, he abandoned that book and put his full attention on teaching those who were seeking his counsel. However, Russell did keep the first few chapters of Beelzebub's Last Wish. If you would like to read them for fun, as they do contain some profound esoteric ideas, here they are. Beelzebub's Last Wish, by Russell A. Smith. Copyright, The Dog, 1999. Chapter 1. Everything is relative. Silence permeated Hussein's inner world, for he already knew the contents of the etherogram that was being handed to him by a messenger who had obviously made great haste in bringing it. Beelzebub, his most beloved grandfather, was dead. Fortunately, Hussein had previously consciously prepared himself for this inauspicious event. Knowing well beforehand of its inevitability. However, he was not at all prepared for the request that was attached, nor for the degree of exaltation bereavement that was about to be evoked in his being. The request read as follows. My dear Hussein, it is my final wish that my planetary remains be lain to rest in that solar system which served for me as the cathode beginning of all that I have accomplished in this universe, namely, that solar system Oars. And I further request that you, yourself, personally accompany them in order to choose a suitable location befitting the zimus of my existence. It was signed by Beelzebub and also bore the seal of the All Quarters Maintainer, the most great archangel Sakaki, which indicated that our most holy endlessness himself was not only aware of such a request, but had fully sanctioned it. Then, in something that resembled a postscript, Beelzebub had added, "I start over." Hussein's face went blank as he inwardly, simultaneously experienced the aforementioned state of exaltation bereavement, and could neither rejoice from the genuine, objective impulse that arises in a being when he essence recognizes the phenomenal accomplishment of another, nor cry from the greatest subjective impulse of self-losing. And the reason for the arousal in Hussein of these two sharply opposite being sensations stemmed from his realization that Beelzebub was not only physically dead, but that his higher being parts had transcended the limits of the universe. And such a transcending signified both the ultimate universal attainment and the greatest universal loss. Hussein was aware that such a possibility was possible, for when it recently, unexpectedly occurred for the first time in the universe, it was Hussein who stepped forth to explain it. However, since it had occurred only once in the infinity of the universe, no one seriously considered that it would ever happen again, let alone that if it did happen again, that it would happen so soon. The first unexpected occurrence happened during a special luncheon gathering held in the honor of the great All Quarters Maintainer, Arch-Cherub Helk Gematios, who, long ago, had become the first being in the universe to merit the sacred anklad, that is, to attain the 18th gradation of reason. The degree of reason, which was third after the reason of our endlessness, and which was everywhere believed to be the highest gradation of reason that any independent individual could attain. During this luncheon gathering, right after the customary accolades had been extolled upon Arch-Cherub Helk Gematios, Arch-Cherub Peshtvolkner asked Helk Gematios this question.
"Having become the first to become all that you can possibly become, and now having for so long been all that you can possibly be, what next?"
The rest is legendary. The great Arch-Cherub Helk Gematios sat silently, appearing to be in a state of deep reflection. Then, looking in the direction of the Sun Absolute, and in a tone of surprised realization, he simply said, "I start over." After which, he stood up and disappeared. Everyone was bewildered by what had happened. Even the great arch-chemist-physicist Angel Louisos was unable to offer a plausible solution. That is, until Hussein came forward and suggested that the answer could be found within the laws of world creation and world maintenance in the duplicating principle. Hussein suggested that perhaps the duplicating principle was not only the founding principle of the universe, but also its ultimate possibility. Everyone knows that the way down is the way up, he said, referring to how the harmonic structure of descending forces become the requisite structure for ascending forces. Hussein also pointed out that the process of ascension occurs only if and when any three harmonically ratioed forces re-blend and continues, he said, only for as long as the three forces remain in the harmonic ratio. However, he asked, what would happen if the three holy forces, which are capable of being held in harmonic ratio, were to be intentionally held at the same identical ratio? Why, the three holy forces would become one, exclaimed Archangel Louisos. And we all know that one is indistinguishable from one, he said. And yet, one and one become two. Therefore, if something becomes one with one, he added, then that which was one must now be two. It took only a moment for Archangel Louisos to understand the significance of his response. The oneness of God and the universe had been duplicated. In other words, the most sacred arch-cherub, Helkgamatios, through the process of becoming one, had ultimately fulfilled the duplicating principle and was now the endlessness of his own universe. What a glorious day that was, when the universe, unexpectedly, first duplicated itself. And now, through Beelzebub, the first being to merit the sacred anklad while still coated in a planetary body, the universe had done it again. This time, leaving behind one last wish. A request from Beelzebub to his grandson. Of course, the sanctioning of Beelzebub's request by our endlessness was not only appropriate, but indeed necessary, because this aforementioned solar system, Oars, had recently, within the last year, according to objective time calculation, been declared off-limits by a specially prepared panel of sacred advisors, whose sole responsibility it was to foresee all cosmic calamities that may occur concerning the unfavorable contact with any of the three-brained being species that have arisen in the universe. These sacred advisors had deduced that the three-brained being species breeding on the planet Earth, which is, of course, a part of the solar system Oars, had recently acquired the ability to detect the movements of all interplanetary spaceships entering their solar system, and also to even detect those ships which fell in close proximity. And, well knowing that these particular three-brained beings could not, as of yet, objectively perceive the sense of their own existence, could therefore not be counted upon to fathom, even subjectively, the possibility of the existence of other beings. Nonetheless, Beelzebub's last request had been made and sanctioned, and it was now Hussein's obligation to fulfill it. Hussein wasted no time in making arrangements. He cleared his schedule indeterminately, then laid course for his home planet. Upon arrival, he was immediately informed that several of the most learned beings had already begun to ascertain how this covert operation, on which Hussein was about to embark, might be accomplished. He was hurriedly ushered into the Great Hall, the hall where all decisions of importance were customarily made, only to find the participants in a much heated debate.
"It cannot be done,"
exclaimed the chief common universal archchemist physicist, Angel Louisos.
"According to my calculations, we will, undoubtedly, be detected."
"I concur, Your Reverence," said Arch-Engineer Archangel Algamatant, as the others nodded in agreement.
"Why such a request was ever sanctioned by our endlessness is beyond reason," Louisos muttered.
"Maybe not," declared Hussein, as he entered the Great Hall. "Perhaps, if we vary our line of falling at different points along the way, we might be able to keep the main star of that solar system always between us and the third planet. This should not only conceal our approach, but our presence as well. Provided, of course, we do not have to make a sojourn to the third planet itself. In which case, other measures will have to be formulated." The gathered assembly was stunned by Hussein's remarks and looked to Archangel Louisos for confutation. Louisos placed his right hand upon his chin and stared off into the distance. Then, while slightly nodding his head, he uttered to himself, in a barely perceptible voice, "That just might work." A few minutes passed before Louisos regained the presence of the moment, after which, in an attempt to satisfy the expectations of his colleagues, he addressed Hussein in an authoritative tone.
"How is it possible that you, Hussein, a young man, could conceive such a simple answer to what appeared to us to be such a difficult problem?"
Hussein paused for a moment. Then, with a puzzled look on his face, he replied as if under an obvious assumption. "How could it be possible for a young man who has greatly benefited from the wisdom of his predecessors to not?" Louisos began to laugh.
"Ah, Hussein," he said, "by the laws of the stars and with the tact and wisdom of your grandfather, you have bested us once again."
Louisos arose and fondly embraced Hussein.
"Now," he said, "tell us of your calculations. We may not be young men, but we are still capable of learning."
That concludes today's podcast. If you would like a chance to read the whole book, The Blueprint of Consciousness, An Accelerated Path to Awakening, which is available as a high-quality 520-page hardback, and also as a PDF download, simply visit the store at our website, thedogteachings.com. The Blueprint of Consciousness contains an objective exercise in awakening that has literally awakened hundreds of people. Be free. Be awake. Be real. And realize your full potential as a human being. On our website, you'll be able to listen to other talks, obtain diagrams, animations, supporting videos, and much, much more. In addition, you can also find us on Instagram and Facebook under The Dog Teachings. And, as a reminder, we have 2 Zoom classes every Saturday to assist you. Level 1 is freely available for anyone who purchases the Blueprint of Consciousness. And the other is for those who have obtained the Master Exercises and the Double or Nothing Exercises. See under resources/Zoom classes for more details. All at thedogteachings.com. That's thedogteachings.com. Goodbye. Until next time.